It's time for Windows Weekly. Big changes for the HoloLens team. Its leader is out. Paul and Mary Jo talk about why. Windows 11 closer to completion. Paul walks me through the upgrade at 22H2. And Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 is coming. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 780, recorded Wednesday, June 8th, 2022. Call of Jury Duty. Windows Weekly is brought to you by FlexTrack, the purple teaming platform. Save time and increase productivity with the premier cybersecurity reporting and workflow management product designed to support proactive security strategy from assessment through remediation. Visit FlexTrack.com/TWiT and claim your free month. And by Nuvei. Say goodbye to abandoned carts, poor approval rates, and high chargebacks with Nuvei, the platform fast forwarding to the next generation of payments. Turn payments into powerful accelerators for your business at Nuvei.com. And by Hover. Whether you're a developer, photographer, or small business, Hover is something for you to expand your projects and get the visibility you want. Go to hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. It's time for Windows Weekly. Big sigh. Paul Thurrott is here, Thurrott.com. He is also an author, a book author, many books. Hey, somebody said you should have, at leanpub.com, you should have your that shelf on over your right shoulder there be the Windows colors, but I think you kind of are trying to do that. Maybe put the red one up above.
Then it would look like never occurred to me. Yeah, that's a good point.
It would be a Windows logo.
Right.
Wouldn't that be cool?
I don't know if I have all the, that's pretty good. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know if I have the right colors for that, but.
It doesn't have to be the right colors. That's Mary Jo Foley on the right there. Hi, Mary Jo Foley.
Hello. I don't have a Windows logo, but that's fine.
You have a bookshelf. 4 out of 5 Zoom calls involve bookshelves in the background.
Right.
Room Raider would give you at least, you start with an 8 if you've got a bookshelf behind you.
Wow.
That's a very Parisian apartment.
It is. It is.
You always see bookshelves in Paris apartments.
Yeah. We our studio died on Sunday because we had a power outage, and I had to go home and do the show. And of the 4 people on the show, I had a bookshelf behind me. Alex Wilhelm had a bookshelf behind me. Dan Gilmore had a bookshelf behind me. Only Jill Duffy from PC Magazine did not. I didn't call her out, though, because she's very smart.
And that sounds like you just did.
Well, she would have one probably on the other side. That's all. It was just,
exactly.
You know.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Off camera.
Off camera. And I'm sure somewhere in the house, Paul has a book or two.
Not anymore.
We've all digital?
Through a process of downsizing, yeah.
Really?
I mean, we have a handful of books, but yeah.
Really?
Yep.
I used to say that... this is 4 or 5 years ago, I would say, on the radio show, physical media is dead.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need physical media. You don't need albums, CDs, books, DVDs. Right. And people would yell at me, saying
there is a nostalgia to it. There's also kind of a hipster element. I define a hipster as someone who is nostalgic for a time they did not experience.
That's who's buying turntables. People in their 20s.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Turntables are great because they're inconvenient and expensive.
Yeah.
But
right. And the music sounds terrible.
The music sounds fine, you know. Or it can sound fine.
Yeah,
I don't know. I love books. I've always loved books. It's a weird coincidence because when we moved to, my wife and I were just talking about this. We had stored boxes and boxes of books at my parents' house when we moved to Phoenix. And they eventually shipped them out. But in the interim, they never told us that they had taken those books out of their attic, which was dry, and put them into the garage, which is wet.
Oh.
And half the books were destroyed.
Oh.
Oh, no.
So that was, that was fun.
Oh.
But you know what, though?
No, and there's but there's certain books you need to have in print still, like cookbooks. Right?
Yes.
You can get digital versions, but you want the physical version of that.
Right? No, you're right. No, absolutely. And we do, we do have cookbooks.
Mary Jo, I don't know if that's true.
Yes. I know. They get dirty.
I don't know if that's true. If you have an iPad.
Well, Mary Jo would have them on her. She would have them electronically if Microsoft had just made a book.
That weird.
About half the time, I wouldn't do it on a Nook or a Kindle, but about half the time I cook off my laptop or iPad. And then the other half of the time I go to my cookbooks. I have them on the shelf in the kitchen and I'll open it up.
Yeah. I just like perusing the physical
copy. Oh, I love that.
It makes ideas jump out at more than flipping through like on a screen.
My whole life, my mom, because she was a homemaker and like a big focus of her life was making the meals, would in the morning go, she'd read at cookbooks all the time. In the morning, she would look through her cookbooks and plan the dinner. So I grew up with that. It's funny because she's 88 now, and I gave her a June oven, one of those Android-connected smart ovens. Yeah. She loves it, by the way, because you put in a bagel.
Does? Wow.
Well, I know. She's very hip. So you put in a bagel, it goes, is that a bagel? Yeah. You want me to toast it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. She kind of likes that. Wow. And she said, oh, and honey, you saved my life because now I scroll, instead of reading cookbooks, I scroll through the June oven app. And look at, and it's very much like a cookbook. There's pictures.
Yeah.
So now she does that on her iPhone. So who knows? The world has changed.
I physical media, whatever. But I mean, if you want to be mobile in any way, not having to carry books, not having to carry CDs, not having to carry whatever.
Books, albums. Imagine. Yeah. I have friends who have walls of albums. There is nothing heavier.
Yeah. Well, those will make beautiful kindling for the fire, but.
Melt the vinyl.
I like to listen to music on a plane,
Yeah, exactly.
Or in a different location.
Well, somebody's saying in the chat room, Virgil's saying physical books work when there's no power.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Where would that be? I mean,
If your power has been out for so long you can't read books on a device, you've got way bigger problems than content.
Yes.
But no, but fair enough. I'm sure.
Well, yeah. And there are places you can't play Xbox on a submarine. It's, but you just have to get used to that. Hey, speaking of Xbox, the guy who created the Kinect.
Yeah.
The guy who was kind of the tip of the spear on HoloLens.
Hold on a second. Hold on. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think it's very important that we recognize his greatest achievement of all time, which, of course, was the Windows Vista Ultimate Xers. But please, continue.
Was that his first outing at Micro? He's been there how long?
It was his first public outing.
21 years. Alex
Kipman is out, and apparently out under a cloud.
That's right.
Yes.
Tell us what happened.
Where to begin? There's so many factors, and we don't have all the pieces either, right? So
some of it you could say are, well, this is part of the dismantling of HoloLens, right?
You could say that, but I'm not entirely sure that's correct. So Kipman has been heading up the HoloLens since it was first introduced and before that as well. 2015, that was the first time Paul and I were at the event where they showed off the HoloLens.
And for benefit of people like me who aren't, following this closely, he's the long-haired guy who had the rave at the end of Build. Was it last year?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Dancing around the campfire.
He
wasn't always long-haired. Like a lot of people at Microsoft, you get a little famous, you get a little money. And then he turned into kind of a hippie freak. I don't know what happened there. But and I was looking up Alex Kipman recently, and, his earliest appearances, he was very clean cut.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Now he looks like a homeless person, but I think that's an effect.
I wasn't familiar with him before that HoloLens event, and I thought, he's one of those artistic types. He's an Adam Newman type. He's a, he's a free thinker. He probably isn't wearing shoes. And, he's like that.
He makes his own yogurt. I think we could go on and on.
Yeah, he's Mr. Kombucha. Exactly. So, but that's not, he didn't come from those.
Well, he came from Brazil.
He has an accent.
Yeah, he's from Brazil.
Not that that means anything, but
I was going to say. I mean, so he's exotic to us.
Right. He's a strange bird.
Yeah.
Microsoft has treated him as kind of a genius at the company.
That's right.
It's like Alex says this. Alex was doing.
Well, what's
this,
his title? His title was like fellow.
I think he's a technical fellow, isn't he?
Yeah.
Technical fellow. He is now a technical fellow. I was looking back at my notes. He moved under Scott Guthrie and the Cloud Plus AI org back in 2018, right? So he used to be in devices with Windows, then they moved him over to cloud. I feel like there was a lot of things they were trying to figure out. Where does he fit best? Who can manage this guy? You know.
Well, Connect was a hit, right?
For a year.
Well,
and we should be fair.
It had a 1 year run. Where it
came
was,
from an Israeli everything. Company, PrimeSense, right? So it wasn't developed under Kipman. He just ran it once they bought it. Is that right?
Okay.
The Connect stuff.
Yeah, probably.
Stuff.
The Connect stuff. But yeah, and Connect was the best-selling consumer item of all time until it wasn't.
For 1 year, yeah.
And then suddenly it was like,
It became a boat anchor. Remember that one of the many things that sunk Xbox One is that Microsoft required you to get a Kinect.
Right. $100
with
more.
It.
Right.
Yeah.
And as soon as they stopped doing that, it sold better and developers stopped supporting Kinect immediately.
Which is sad because I loved the Kinect, but okay, fine.
Well, you know, for all the same reasons one might like a Nintendo Wii or whatever. There was some fun stuff.
You could exercise in front of it. This was very early on. Yeah. And it would know your heart rate and it could say, work harder or, no, you're trying too hard. Or in my case, get up. And
can't tell you from the couch. Are you in the room?
Well, it was cool because you'd walk in and it would have a ghost-like image of your whole room and it would see you and it would recognize. Yep. I would say, hi, Leo. And
when it factored into one of the, what do you call those? Those horror movie. There was a horror movie where the Xbox scanning the room was part of the plot.
Oh, how fun.
I can't think of the name, but I'm sorry. Anyway, it had a little cameo in a big horror movie.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So there's lots to say about it.
Yeah. And then, he really became the face of the HoloLens. He's considered the father of the HoloLens, right? So all the time when Microsoft was showing long-term vision kinds of things, like here's how holoperation is going to work, all these like crazy futuristic visions. The picture, the banner on top of our Notion today is him in underwater in a virtual space.
That was
much
so
like
weird.
The HoloLens business itself.
Yeah,
underwater.
Pretty much.
With whales.
I'm going to keep using that joke until
it was like you were in an aquarium.
Right. And, the original vision for HoloLens was it was going to be both a consumer and a business play. And Kipman was most excited about the consumer part, obviously. Like, that's where he thought it really was going to have a future.
They very clearly, actually,
end,
that's...
It didn't.
That was Microsoft Mesh he was showing, right?
Yeah, last year he showed off Mesh, which is the platform for working together in these collaborative spaces that are in a virtual world. Right.
I think from the very beginning, in that 2015 event we keep referencing, Microsoft really didn't know what to do with HoloLens. They just knew they had to get it out into the world. And some of the first demonstrations that we did were entertainment-based. There was that Minecraft experience, right?
Yeah. That was cool.
It was the video game thing on the wall where the creatures would burst through the wall. Mm-hmm. And then they had the kind of productivity things like you're fixing an electrical wire in a wall and you've got a Skype screen at the time of an actual electrician telling you not to kill yourself, please, or whatever. Which these were all just kind of ideas. Like here are some of the things we think this might be good at. And it didn't take long for the gaming stuff to go by the wayside.
Be the focus.
It happened pretty quick.
No, it was too expensive a device for the consumer market. It was definitely too bulky and big, right? It wasn't like a consumer headset. But they realized like, maybe there is a business opportunity here. And so let's use it for things like dynamics, right? And let's use it for things that are more business oriented. And that's where it ended up being positioned along with the military market.
along with the military.
Which has been kind of a mixed bag, right?
Army. Right.
Army,
the Army
deal.
Contract. Yeah, the Army IVAS contract, which is headsets based on HoloLens technology. Yeah. $22 billion deal over 10 years. It's been very rocky, and Army supposedly
by the way,
very unhappy.
Here's Alex talking to people without legs, by the way. This is the...
Yes, yep. That was the mesh.
I want to see him legless.
Mesh for teams.
This type of thing, though, this is that Leo's showing now, and the earlier things as well, is also one of the central issues with HoloLens, because the way they have to demonstrate this in 2D, they make it look like this is far more immersive than it really is.
Mm-hmm. You complained about that from
with
day
HoloLens,
one.
It's just the field of view issue, right? Which, by the way, did get better in V2 for sure. But, you're when you're presenting holograms all over the space you can see, it makes it seem like you see holograms everywhere in the world, and you don't. You see them in this
mail slot,
very specific, right? A mail slot. It did get better, and it probably would have kept getting better over time. I'm sure maybe whatever they do with it, it will get better. But unfortunately, I'm sure they struggled with how do we convey what this is like. Unfortunately, what they landed on was a lie, because this is not what it's like. That's not what it looks like. It just isn't, you know.
Yeah.
So that's not his fault, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I don't know who you blame there, but.
No.
And then Altspace was the Burning Man thing,
fire
right?
Fire pit. Yeah. Yep. So when they first announced this Teams for Mesh and Mesh Vision, really the only place it works is Altspace. Like the vision was to make it work in a larger context, but it really right now is very kind of connected to and stuck with Altspace. So, yeah, everybody was like, okay, that's like a good first take, but like, is it going to work with HoloLens? Is it going to work with other headsets? Is it going to work with my phone? And Microsoft said yes to all of this, but it never showed it actually working with those things, right? So, yeah.
You get on the guy. This is such a huge topic. I mean, there's all, you know, HoloLens is AR, augmented reality. There's also a Windows mixed reality platform, which is MR or VR, like virtual reality. Right. These are two completely different technologies. I obviously there's some overlap, but they're very different presentation wise.
This was
the ability to see the real world.
This was the 2017 Ignite presentation that to me made me actually think, oh, this guy's kind of an alt kind of person,
yeah.
Right? There he is in his black Converse sneakers talking to a frog.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Guy La Liberté of Cirque du Soleil, and they go into the Burning Man. And
yeah, so right. the problem here is anything AR or VR related, if you want it to be fun and exciting for people, you have to show consumer stuff, right? Because
but that's not the real market.
Are we going to have a work? What is this? Is this like a work meeting in mortar I'm looking at? What's this environment?
Yeah.
You know, we're here at the pit of fire where the One Ring was destroyed. And, you know, I just don't,
but
it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Engineers using it to design products. I mean, there's a lot of sensible uses.
Yes.
The problem is they're not
That's right.
They're not, ooh.
No, they don't demo
Right. One of the best demos they gave, not because it was visually compelling, but because you could see that it would make sense, was you give a HoloLens headset to an engineer designing a vehicle. Instead of having to come up with a 2,000-pound lump of clay and shave it off until it starts looking like a car, and then you run your test on it to see if it's aerodynamic or whatever, you can design this thing in AR, and then you can give less expensive MR, like Windows mixed reality headsets, to other people on the team, and they can walk around this thing and look at it from different angles and give you feedback and point out things that should be changed or whatever. So you had that kind of creator viewer dichotomy that, you know, I think makes sense in some cases, like, you know, automobile design is one of them. You know, I don't know how many
healthcare,
and you see something like that, you're like,
time,
yeah,
those make sense.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Do you want someone with a, what's he wearing? What are you doing as you're going under? Are you going to look at me, or are you going to put a headset on? What are you doing?
They show a lot of medical things, like instructing students on a procedure, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, or, you know, telemedicine. And,
Okay, there you go.
Those all make sense.
Right. So, you know, like, I think HoloLens gave them something that was really fun to demo, really cool. It made them look cutting edge, innovative, right? And then the reality comes into play, and they're like, okay, but how do you make money on this? Like, you're selling these for $3,000 a piece. Like, how many are you going to sell, right? They're not cheap.
Well, by the way, the other thing that happened that we shouldn't forget is Apple started working on what will eventually be their own headset, but they introduced ARKit for iPhones and iPads. And I've done some of those AR experiences just on an iPad. And once you do that, you're like, actually, this makes a lot more sense. It's usable right now. It's super affordable. Anyone can do it. I think I used the example of, I don't remember if it was the Museum of Natural History in New York or somewhere, but I don't know why I can't remember the museum, but I went to a museum where you could look at a dinosaur skeleton because it was there, and then you could bring up your phone, and they would show you what it looked like with skin and whatever. And so you could kind of see, you do this little AR thing. You're like, that's amazing. I'm not going to bring a $3,000 hall lens to a museum, you know.
Yeah.
But I would bring my phone, you know.
Right.
I always thought that was great.
You know? Here, this is from 2021. they're going into space.
This is ludicrous.
Yeah. And then they're going to go dance with the
In spite of all of this that we've talked about so far, this isn't the main reason that we think Alex Kipman is leaving.
You don't think this is the main reason?
I have to say,
honestly, looking at this now, I feel like this should be the main reason.
This is might have been when people started question marks, maybe.
Agree. Right.
Because it looks like, I'll be honest, it looks like he's tripping balls.
Yeah.
Like what, you know.
What is happening?
What's happening?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, boy.
Earlier this year, Business Insider had a story where they had allegations of him acting inappropriately with his team, especially with women on the team. And once that happened,
plus
it was
terrible
quiet.
Dancing.
All quiet.
Yeah.
All quiet.
And this is a problem Microsoft has had with others. I mean, this is didn't Satya Nadella say we're gonna stop this?
He did say that. Yeah.
And he's done nothing. Yeah. There's been
I feel
it started
like
Bill Gates and...
He's tried to clean up in places, but, you know, people these days are just not as tolerant as they used to be, and they're like, well, that's the way workplaces are. No, that's not the way workplaces should be, right? And I think he's done some things that were good to get Microsoft on the path of cleaning up this kind of culture, but it's not going as quickly as people wanted it to go.
To wonder... Right. I mean, Satya Nadella's got to be standing there. This is a corporate event.
Yeah.
Microsoft Ignite.
I know.
And thinking, what are we doing
right here?
What's happened?
I think it's something that might have gotten the attention of the mainstream press because it's futuristic and not boring, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which Microsoft, you know, you're not going to see the latest Azure services on the evening news when Build comes around.
Yeah. No, we paid attention to it. That's true.
Yeah.
That's what I remember.
Yeah.
It's the last 10 minutes of that presentation.
Yeah. So, as of this week, Scott Guthrie put out a memo and said, so Alex and I have been talking and he's going his way and we're going ours. And that's that. And we're going to split his team in half. And the hardware team is going to Panos under Windows and Devices, and the software team is going under Experiences and Devices, Jeff Teeper, which is where that mesh for team stuff happens. And there you go. That's what we're doing with HoloLens.
Also, I mean, related to this too, it was only a few months ago, maybe February, I don't remember the timing, where there were news reports that most of the HoloLens team had left, you know, and gone to Meta or whatever. And Alex Kipman at that time came out and had kind of said something to the effect of, this is not true.
Yeah.
You know, without many details to the contrary. Right. But, you know, very clearly, I think things have been falling apart there. There's the bad news with the Army contract they have where they expect a lot of negative feedback from that. It's probably not going to meet the Army's needs, frankly.
Right.
I think there's just a lot going wrong there.
So to be clear, Microsoft did not say there was inappropriate behavior.
They have not said that publicly.
That's been speculation. And I have to say from, you know, some knowledge of employment law, you generally don't say that out loud.
Right. You do not.
Right.
It's unproven allegation. I mean, you might decide to terminate somebody, but you're not going to say why.
You're not going to say because of complaints of sexual harassment. You're not going to say that publicly.
Well, of course. And in the rich history of this kind of thing, and Microsoft certainly has a lot of experience, unfortunately, you go to that person and say, look, you're leaving one way or the other. We'll let you leave. It would be better for everyone if you just left of your own free will. And we'll position it like that. But if you don't, you need to understand.
Yeah.
We're going to have to come out and explain what happened.
Right.
And,
That's exact. I think nailed it. That's exact. Because, you know, it has, if you pay the guy, for instance, you know, I mean, I'm just thinking what happened at Google when they paid, what's his name, the founder of Android, $95 million to get out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
No, okay. That can you even imagine the outcry if that happened?
Yeah. But a publicly held company, you've got to disclose.
Right.
So it's hard to hide that stuff. Yeah, it's probably that's exactly. Scott Goo called him in and said, you got two choices here.
Yep.
But we don't know.
Well, Mary Jo has a theory about this report. I don't know if you wanted to talk about that, but you know, when this thing came out in the Business Insider, it's like, well, how did this come about?
Do you think they leaked it?
Well, okay. So as a journalist who's worked in this field for a long time, you know, everybody gets scoops different ways, right? Sometimes you actually stumble onto a real scoop. Sometimes companies give you something and they want to pretend that you got it. Sometimes companies give you something and say, we want you to put this out there because we have an agenda and we want you to help us further the agenda.
That happens
and
it'll look a lot. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah,
too. Same. So I don't know if any of those things happen. I'm not trying to pour cold water on Business Insider's reporting at all, because what they got was amazing. But you got to wonder about the timing, right? The Army deal starts falling apart. And then suddenly there are these allegations being brought to the public eye. And the next thing you know, it gets quiet. And then Alex Kipman's leaving, right? So you're like, oh, I wonder how that happened in that sequence, right? Anyway, just a theory, just a thought, right?
I think maybe they planted a story with Business Insider saying...
I have no idea. I have no idea if that's the case. But
certainly it does happen.
It happens.
Yeah.
It's happened to me. It's happened to every reporter, right? Like sometimes
it could literally been a group of employees at Microsoft who were tired
who
that nobody
that
had
out.
Done anything
that's
about
right.
this guy's Agreed. Activities and yep. said, let's
we just won't
collectively, the two Agreed. Or three of us go to a reporter and let's get it out there public so we can point to that thing and say, see, we told you to do something about this 2 years ago. Now
you
what
didn't.
Are you going to do?
Yeah. Right.
And they forced their hand.
I think that might be the case because this accusation of him watching a VR porn pillow fight at a meeting.
Yeah.
That sounds like the kind of thing, certainly Microsoft wouldn't leak that.
No, they would not.
That sounds like the kind of thing a disgruntled employee might say, you know, you got to understand this guy.
Like, I tried to get this out there and you guys wouldn't take it seriously, right? Yeah. So, we don't know how it happened, but I think it's just good to keep in mind, like, these things can happen that way, and that sometimes is how people force out someone or make something happen without it looking like, you know, Microsoft forced him out.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It just seems to make sense.
Politicians have done that for years. They call it trial balloons.
For sure.
They say, well, let's see if, let's send this one up, see if people.
Yeah. See if we can get a bite.
Yeah. Agree. Yeah. Anyway, I think what's more interesting to me than all of this background and what happened there is now what's going
to
happen.
That to me is more interesting too. What does this mean for HoloLens? They've split it up, right? That's
right.
What does that mean? It's two different divisions. I don't understand that at all. How do you run?
Well,
how do you run an innovative new product with two different groups?
Yeah. So Panos has never been in charge of the HoloLens hardware. Right. Like that, even though he's the hardware chief at Microsoft, he has never produced the HoloLens or built the HoloLens.
Right.
So, you know, I saw Dina Bass, who works at Bloomberg today, saying, I wonder if this is the end of the HoloLens hardware, because is Panos going to want to do that? But here's my thought. Panos wants to do everything Apple's doing. Right. Like that's pretty much where he goes. Right. So if Apple's building an AR headset, Panos has to be thinking, like, I guess we need one too.
Yeah.
Somehow, right? So I don't know if it's the end of the HoloLens or if it's the... And then there's been speculation by Business Insider again from some reporting they did where they said maybe the future of the HoloLens is just an industrial headset for business use only, next version of the HoloLens.
Vertical markets.
That, right?
This is the only place that's seen success.
Right? Yeah. I could see that happening too. Yeah,
but they could also see them turning into a software platform similar to Windows Mixed Reality,
where
they license its use to other hardware makers that want to create
there's a
either
history of
vertical.
That. That's what Windows is.
It's don't know. I don't know. I just don't see that being successful.
Well, the part of the division that went to Jeff Tepper is the mesh platform, right? So the mesh platform is the holoportation underlying layer stuff, the SDK, the stuff with mesh for Teams.
But don't you see
could
that
turn that into a platform?
They're going to bring that's how they'll bring it to the Oculus, or they'll bring mesh to Oculus, or bring mesh to whatever Apple does, or
Meta. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, Apple did not say word one about AR, VR
their
yesterday.
Headset, right.
Zero.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Did anybody expect them to, though?
Yes.
Like, or are they waiting? I thought people were saying maybe not till it's more fully baked.
We didn't think they'd show it.
Mary Jo.
Yeah.
Clearly, you don't pay attention to Apple rumors. So There was,
I do not.
Over the course of days, this thing went all the way up and all the way down and all, you know. It's there was some trademark thing or something. As oh, this really? Is that means they're going to talk about it. And it was like, oh, hold on, they're not ready.
They have trademarked something called Reality OS, and there was some timing things that implied that maybe they were going to announce it worldwide to yesterday. Right. And none of that. Monday, I should say, none of that. Yeah. None, they didn't say the word AR or VR at all.
That's right. Not even right. So I think whatever they wanted to do is not ready. And I think they've had to
except
punt it.
The logic was, well, you got a bunch of developers here who are going to have to develop stuff for this.
Yeah. Well, no, but that means it's not coming out this year.
That's what it sounds like to me. Like, it's not.
Well, it can't be. It can't.
No.
Because people are like,
they don't have an SDK. Like, if you don't give them an SDK, what's the point of even saying it to them?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
no, you're right. Right. Yeah. So they didn't have it.
Yep.
They have other stuff they want them to do, and they aren't that close.
Yeah. Right.
So good news, Panos, you got some time.
Yeah. And they probably want Meta to show more of their hand before they show theirs, right?
By the way, something else to pay attention to in this world, and I don't know enough about it to have a lengthy discussion, is Tim Sweeney, the guy that runs Epic Games, who for much of his career has been a staunch anti-Microsoft, anti-Windows Store / Microsoft Store guy. Remember 3 years ago was on stage at the last HoloLens event and fully supporting Microsoft. He has supported, or Microsoft and him have supported each other in this battle that Epic has against Apple and Google. He had an interview recently where he was talking about stores and the metaverse and what the future looks like. And honestly, surprisingly, I guess, he is backing Facebook. He thinks Meta. He thinks Meta's play in VR is in AR, whatever, is the platform to follow, like is the thing to pay attention to. And again, I don't know a lot about that. I'm not sure I know any more than what I just said, but it's interesting because of who he is and how he has aligned himself against these massive big tech companies.
But he hates Apple, right? Doesn't he?
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why he's backing Meta, right? Because he can't back Microsoft. Microsoft doesn't have something in the consumer gaming space. Right?
What about Activision? Well, what about doing something with Activision?
Who?
Microsoft.
Microsoft.
They're buying Activision.
Buy them.
They might. They got a lot of gaming content. PlayStation has announced they're going to do PlayStation VR for PS5.
Activision's going to fly through, you know, as fast as these things can fly. If they ever came up and said, now we're going to partner with EA, I think the world. Okay, hold on a second. Not so quick there, big guy.
I don't know. This is sputtering along. This is not exactly taking the world by storm.
Nope.
We'll see.
Yep.
No. And this is that next wave thing. Remember, you know, Terry Myerson comes in. They lost in smartphones. Well, what's the next wave? Maybe it's ambient computing, Cortana, voice commands, digital assistants. It is, but not for us. Maybe it's HoloLens, mixed reality. Maybe. You know, I don't. Apple seems to be betting that. Well, Apple bet on the Apple Watch. That didn't work out as the next wave. So maybe AR is the next wave for Apple. They seem to think it might be still. Cars kind of come and gone and maybe come back a little bit. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think the thing to always remember, and I know everyone's going to boo me, Microsoft's an enterprise company.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
Right. I mean, like, that's what they care about. That's where their successes are. I know they want to break into consumer in a bigger way, but like, the reason they broke the HoloLens up the way they did is they're like, well, how can we maximize this for the enterprise? That's weren't thinking.
And the thing I said about mesh and rival platforms, you know, Microsoft will do in AR what they did in smartphones, which is just put their stuff on any platform that makes sense.
Yeah.
And you know, that's just pragmatic. That's the Microsoft way.
Right.
But you know,
even when they talked about mesh, remember? When they talked about mesh, they were like, yeah, we're going to support other third-party headsets. Like, they were very much like, this is going to be a third-party play, not just us, right? Not just us building a closed ecosystem.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
So I was actually asleep during most of that, so I don't remember that. But
I was.
What about the campfire?
I was
guys, the
balls.
Campfire.
I don't remember any of it.
So I was probably playing a Call of Duty game during the campfire sequence.
This is how I would read the tea leaves. So maybe you had to get rid of Kipman. But if you still were all in on HoloLens, you don't split the division. So
no, it, you, yeah, don't, you know, them
I don't think they
have,
you replace it.
I don't think they have anyone left. I
you
think
replace them.
I think all the
no.
So
no, not everybody left. There's still a lot of people working. On it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, there's a lot of turnover in all of these speculative divisions. Yeah. The Apple Card thing is a revolving door. But sure. I just feel like this is Microsoft's kind of saying, yeah, we had to get rid of Kitman, but at the same time, we're not all in on this, right? Am I right?
Or we're all in on it in a very much more constrained
in a
way.
In a minor
like
way.
Industrial headsets, right?
Which is,
industrial headsets.
I think the right
they
thing
can make
to
a lot of money on that. Yeah. They can make a lot of money
they're
on
doing
that.
Well in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, even Google
would
Glass.
Would panels want to make a headset for, like, I don't know, like manufacturing companies? I don't know. Would he?
No. He wants to make a consumer thing, right?
Right.
Why on earth would Panos make a Surface Laptop Go or a Surface Go or a Surface SE? Yeah. Because I think that's where his head's at. It's, you know, it's the Apple thing. You know, it's, we want to go where Apple
Same.
Is.
So silly. Yeah. You go to the green fields. You don't go to the well-plowed territory.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, let me take a break. We have still many, many more things to discuss, but the Kitman story is probably the big story of the week.
Yeah, I would say so.
Our show today brought to you by Plex Track, the purple teaming platform. More and more companies are putting together red teams to test their security. Nowadays, that's vital, isn't it? And many of them have blue teams to remediate whatever problems the red teams discover. But communication between red and blue is, of course, paramount. And PlexTrack is perfect for all three, the red, the blue, and the purple teams. It empowers your security team to win the right battles, not spend a lot of time crafting reports, but actually testing. What if you could streamline the communication across the entire security department so that every team member could do their job more efficiently? From simplified data aggregation to reporting to integrated ticketing for remediation to analytics and visualizations for reporting to the board, PlexTrack touches every aspect of the security management workflow. And bottom line, it makes your job easier, makes you more effective, makes your communication more effective. And I guess really the bottom line is gets the job done so your company's safe and secure. Gain a real-time view of your security posture, bringing all your data sources together into one powerful platform where you can triage scanner results, generate powerful analytics and visualizations, assign remediation tasks, attest to your posture, track progress over time. One satisfied PlexTrack user put it this way, quote, "We see PlexTrack as a part of our strategy to move quicker and be proactive, because now we have a real-time view of what we need to focus on, and I have an easy way of showing senior leadership." PlexTrack serves every aspect of the enterprise security program with features designed to improve workflow, collaboration, and communication for all roles, including red team data aggregation. The red team loves this because you can import data from all your automated vulnerability scanners and tools. You can triage. You can report results in half the time. You can use the run module to plan your battles. It's really amazing. Blue team loves it too for remediation. You can assign remediation tasks right on the platform. So you've got a result, fix this through simple integrations with ticketing tools that you're already using. So you have to go out and get a new ticketing tool. You can track your progress over time. And you know, we don't emphasize this enough, but you've always got to prove ROI, right? You've always got to tell the board, the C-level executives, what you're doing and why it works. So PlexTrack really helps you there with powerful but simple analytics, very visual, that can attest to your security posture and prioritize issues, tailor attestation and communication. And it actually helps both team members and the C-suite. And then you've got continuous purple teaming assessment. Begin purple teaming or power up your current strategies with Runbooks, the best in industry tool for test plan execution. This is a really great platform. PlexTrack improves the entire security engagement lifecycle by making it easy to generate security reports. Not a lot of time typing away. It delivers them securely, tracks the issues to completion straight from the platform. so security teams of all sizes and maturities can maximize efficiency and effectiveness. You got to get a demo of this today. Learn more about the product and how it can support proactive security work in your organization. Try it free for a month. PlexTrack. See how it can change your life as a security professional. Go to PlexTrack.com/twit. Claim that free month. PlexTrack.com/TWIT. I think you know that. Please use that, by the way, so they know you saw it with Paul and Mary Jo and they get credit. PlexTrack.com/twit. Thank you, PlexTrack, for supporting Paul and Mary Jo and the work they're doing on Windows Weekly. PlexTrack.com/twit. Supporting the work you're doing to keep your company safe. Boom. Microsoft's leaving Russia. First IBM, now Microsoft. Mm-hmm. I guess that's
timely.
Inevitable. Yeah. Finally? Really? Come on.
Timely.
Timely. Oh, not finally. Yeah.
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 But you know what's kind of weird about this? So they already said they were going to cease new sales in Russia. They said that a few months ago.
Yep.
But I've seen people saying this means 400 people are being cut and Microsoft's going to close its Russian operations. When I asked them, are you actually letting go 400 people? They wouldn't say that. They just said, we're significantly scaling down our operations in Russia. I said, so are people getting let go? And they wouldn't say. I said, or are you reassigning them somewhere to other offices in Europe or elsewhere? And they wouldn't say. So I'm like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Right?
They may not be able to get them out of there, to be honest.
Right?
Yeah, maybe.
They may not want to say, but they may just, those people
maybe,
are on their own.
Right, I know. And also, they're still going to keep supporting existing businesses in Russia, like customers, you know, so.
How are they going to do that, long distance? Or?
Right, exactly. No, okay. I asked, they wouldn't say.
So, okay, interesting, huh?
Yeah, I'm like, okay. I don't know how much of this is just them, like, we have to say this because people are pressuring us and they want us to get out of Russia, or if there is substance to it. The fact they won't give any details is a little weird to me, but yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. Amazon's unionizing, Starbucks unionizing, Google's unionizing, everybody's unionizing. Mm-hmm. I thought this was really
interesting. Activision
Blizzard. Yeah?
Right.
I thought this was really interesting. Microsoft says we welcome it.
Sort of.
What else are they going to say? You know, I mean,
well,
you know,
exactly.
Amazon. No, you could do what Apple and Amazon did, which is hire an anti-unionized firm, get practically bring in the Pinkertons.
Well, you don't know, Mike. Maybe Microsoft has.
Maybe they're doing that
right?
too.
I mean, this
I
is.
Don't know. I read this and I thought this is great. I thought it was really supportive, but maybe
I think that what this is Microsoft had come out because they really want to acquire Activision Blizzard, and that publisher voted to form a union, the employees did. And they said, oh, yeah, no, of course we support that. You know, it's fine. Come on in.
Yeah.
And I think what happened at Microsoft was employees seeing that said, okay, well, I mean, you can't just let them have a union. What about us? I think people, like, the problem with this kind of thing, I think, is going to be that Microsoft, in this case, we'll just talk about Microsoft, will change their policies for rewarding employees, giving them raises, giving them promotions in the wake of unionization because they have a union now. Like, in other words, like this may be one of those things where, depending on who you are and what type of job you have, you may find that your future is a lot more limited than it was before this happened. You know, and that's the way that passive aggressively a company can get back at employees who formed a union, you know, and you can kind of picture that happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's like, we believe the importance of listening to concerns. Like,
right.
Okay. You know,
also remember who authored this blog post, the head corporate lawyer at Microsoft. So, you know, like there's a lot of like a little leeways here and there. Microsoft would prefer not for people to unionize, but they have to say we'll support them if they do. But we want to make sure they don't by keeping them happy, right? That's kind
right.
of
right. That's right.
Where they're and, going. And, right?
All companies say that. I mean,
I know, right?
That's
what I mean.
Well, but that's
I didn't
but
feel
that's how
I didn't feel
unionization
like this was,
efforts are pushed down.
Yeah,
right.
The company will come out and say, okay, you can do this, but if you don't.
Yeah.
Here's what we'll do for you. And then and some employees will vote and they'll say, actually, you know.
Right. Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean,
we will. Yeah.
If they're not going out and hiring a law firm, any unionization law firm, that's a That's a good start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can unionize. We're just saying $17 an hour will be the base pay from going forward.
All companies. I mean, our company would say that. You know, we would prefer you didn't unionize because it's easier to negotiate with you individually. And but if if you feel like that's necessary, you know, that's great. We care about our employees, and we're not going to fight you. I guess that's the thing: is are we going to are they going to fight the union?
Yeah, right. What's the environment you want to create?
Right.
Although it must be a little alarming to the executives at Microsoft or any company to find that your employees are rallying to unionize because it just feels like such a concerted
effort. It's a
vote
of no confidence. Sure. It's like it's saying you're not taking care of us.
Exactly.
So we're going to have to.
That's right.
Because I think even, you know, all things being equal, if employees could get what they want out of the company without unionizing, they'd prefer not to pay union dues. They'd prefer not to have to go through.
Well, there were employees who wanted this Alex Kipman problem to be solved, and that never happened.
Yeah. Right.
And years went by.
No,
you know,
that's
and
right.
I'm sure there was some frustration there.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's really
and who knows how many other things like that are going on.
Yeah, we don't know. Inside knows.
And the old days. Not so old days, mini Microsoft. Remember that guy? Like he would he would publicize employee gripes about a lot of things. And that's the way they pressured leadership to deal with them.
Whatever
because they got employees riled up. He's taking a low level approach and hasn't said anything in a long time.
I think one day a red light shone through the window from a distant
right on his
mini Microsoft was no more.
Never mind.
I think he feels like he isn't needed the way he was under the Ballmer and Gates regimes, perhaps.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Kipman begs to differ, sir.
Let's talk, now that I'm a proud Windows 11 user. I did not, you told me that I could and maybe should go to 22H2, but I just thought, I'm going to live with what I got.
Yeah.
I'm not a seeker, man.
Yes, I think you are being wise, myself.
I mean, nothing,
but
nothing. Well, it's like, you know, also, as I said last week, I want to be a man of the people. I want to experience what a normal person is experiencing.
Exactly.
My and we
mainstream
know that,
user.
Yeah, we've got Paul to experience, you know, what the seekers experience. And, good. Thank you, Paul, for doing that hard work.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, but if you do want to seek, if you do want to seek, now Windows 11 22H2 is in the release preview channel. So that means, you know, this is the final build. We already kind of knew it was 22621 is the RTM, right? It's in release preview. They're trying to get corporate customers to test it now and put it on commercial devices and make sure everything works. There's no incompatibilities. And if you are a regular Windows Insider and you're on release preview, you also can get it now and check it out. If you want to.
So there's dev channel, there's beta channel, there's release preview.
Yes.
It's funny that Microsoft, after all the warnings, says recommended beta channel. Maybe I should do release preview is what you're saying.
Yeah. So just to be clear about what we're looking at here, when you think about dev channel, dev channel in some ways should be called experimental channel. It's not
it
tied
should.
To any version of Windows.
Yeah.
And it's also a one-way street for the most part. Every once in a while, they'll open a little window where you can switch back to beta. But you go down the dev channel route, you're stuck in there. The only way you can get out of that is to pave the thing from space and just do a clean install.
And it says there will be some rough edges and low stability.
Yeah.
You're on the moon,
beta
dude.
Channel, the beta channel and the release preview channel today both offer the same thing because they've, you know, the release channel, release preview has now gone to 22H2. So you can get into that. You can click that setting I talked about where when this thing is released, you're out of the Insider program.
Right.
So you go from whatever channel you're in back to stable, which is honestly a nice thing. That's something you used to have to manually manage yourself. And I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago maybe, I talked about the different ways you could get onto 22H2 today. So this is one of the ways. It doesn't really change anything. You can get into the release preview channel instead of beta. It's same thing today.
How do I get out of it? I accidentally did it. So
you can't get out of it, so you have to restart.
Okay.
That's okay. Just restart.
Okay. And then when I restart, it'll give me a chance to say, I don't want to. I don't want to.
Actually,
it was an accident.
Maybe I'll leave it on release preview.
Well, I'd actually want you just reboot it so you can see the.
Yeah,
you can see the option I was talking about. At least.
Yeah. Takes a little while.
Yeah. So when this thing comes back, just run settings again.
Okay.
Go to Windows Update. Go to Windows Insider Program.
By the way, this has a Windows Hello camera, but it also has a fingerprint, which is nice. So if I've got a microphone in front of my face or whatever, and the Hello doesn't work, the camera doesn't work, I can just use the fingerprint, which is nice. And it does. I like that feature too.
Yeah,
I feel like fingerprints. Maybe do you think fingerprints are a little more secure than a face?
It's more purposeful. I think I choose fingerprint over face because I want to explicitly sign in.
Yeah.
I don't want it signed in because I'm nearby and maybe it's got me on like a wide angle view or something. And all right, so go down to Windows and say, there you go. Now,
a newer build is available. Okay.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah. So
now I can choose my settings here. No.
Yeah, go the bottom thing. It says stop
getting previewed builds. Okay.
So what you can do here is you can.
So after I got 22H2, for instance, I might want to go in here and switch this off.
That's right. Yep. Mm. That's right.
Or unenroll this device immediately.
Right.
That requires a clean install of the latest release of Windows. I'm not going to do that. That's all right. I'm going to stick with it. Let's do it.
At least preview is very safe of all the changes.
Yeah, but go back.
Go back. Okay.
Go back.
Go back. Windows Insider Program. Go back.
Go stop. Go to the stop thing.
Stop. Okay. Stop getting preview builds. Yeah.
And that option that says unenroll.
Yeah.
Turn that on.
Right now.
Because this way, when 22H2 comes out, you'll pop right back out to stable.
It'll be stable.
That's right.
You're brilliant. And I will get updates on 22H2.
That's right. Yep. You'll just move forward normally now.
Okay. Yeah. So let's do it. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, all kinds of things.
At least, unlike in years earlier, I'm not recording on this machine.
And next week, we'll do a little special on data restore and whatnot. It'll be fun.
Putting Linux on your brand new Windows computer.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's downloading 22H2.
Yeah.
How exciting.
It'll take a little while.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. I can dig it.
Yeah, so things to know about this. Release preview channel, like we said, that's the most stable of the insider channel builds. Once the feature update comes out, we still think this is going to happen in the fall, even though this is already in the release preview channel. We think they're just going to keep patching it till the fall, September, October. Then the build will come out. Once the day they say it's ready and it's rolling out to mainstream, that's when the support clock starts ticking on the feature update, right? So, up until then, you don't have to worry about how long is it going to be supported. But once the support clock starts ticking, I have to remind myself because they changed this. Let's see. They've got it now. Home and Pro, 24 months of support for that version. Enterprise and Education, 36 months of support.
Right.
The thing that makes this confusing to a lot of people, including me, is they also likely will continue to roll out features for Windows 11 to mainstream users outside of this feature update.
That's right.
Even though they said there would only be one feature update a year and everybody did a little happy dance, they still went around that and found a way to keep rolling out features. And they're sometimes rolling them out in cumulative updates. There's no rhyme or reason that we can figure out as far as a schedule of that. So we don't know if there will be another feature update roll up before feature update comes out.
Yeah, maybe that File Explorer tabs thing just appears one day. There's no way to know. Yep.
No way
you're
to know.
Right.
There's no way to know.
No,
the thing is,
not.
I just to defend them briefly, I will say Windows 11 shipped in such an incomplete state last October. That, for that first year especially, you want to add some functional updates. Honestly, it kind of needs that. We didn't get much in the way of functional updates. There was that one thing in, February that was, three or four different things. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what was in it. It's really not a big deal, but we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised between now and the end of the year if we saw functional updates to 22H2. Yep.
Same. But the feature update is the only one where the support clock starts ticking, just so you know. Like, if you get those cumulative updates, it doesn't affect how long Windows 11 is supported. It only is hinged around these feature updates.
Hmm.
Okay. It's true.
But, I mean, in terms of what is the significance of this announcement this week, it just means they're getting closer to rolling out 22H2. I can't even remember if there are any. I think we kind of decided last week there weren't any really significant updates in 22H2.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Do you think there are?
Apparently, Paul
new is, accent Paul color for new to accent there are, colors.
There are improvements on across the board, but I wouldn't say there are any traumatic improvements.
That's what I mean. There's incremental, very incremental things like grouping your apps in a folder on your start menu. Woohoo! That kind of stuff.
Well, they brought back the ability to drag and drop a file onto an app icon in the taskbar.
That was a big functional regression. That's a pretty good one. That's a pretty good one.
I think the discoverability of the snap layouts is really nice. That's a new feature.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'll find out in moments.
You will. You will. Yeah. Well, not in moments, but, you know, in hours.
Someday.
At some point.
Yeah.
By next week.
Yeah. Let us know how that goes. You'll be fine.
Yeah. But business users, if you're planning to roll out 22H2 en masse to your customers later this year, if you have people on Windows 11, you probably want to start kicking the tires now. That's why this is out there.
Yeah.
Right?
IT professionals.
Yeah.
Yes.
Leave it to the professionals.
Leave it to the pros.
And I guess to back up what Mary Jo said and also to, once again, bizarrely defend Microsoft, if you accept that 22H2 is not a massive functional upgrade, you know, maybe that's for the best, right? I mean, the times that Microsoft has tried to do a big functional update, those have not gone so well, right? And so you kind of want the slow and steady approach, and I think that's what we're getting here.
So your tip worked still, even with this release preview channel.
That's right. Good. Yeah, it hasn't changed a thing.
Good.
Yep.
Yay. I'm living proof.
Well, we'll see.
Right?
Yeah. We'll see.
This build has the Microsoft Store an ARM? That's interesting.
So this is a different thing. So this is a dev channel build. So
this is not the release candidate. This is something.
No, this is something that could come 23H2. It could be an interim, cumulative update, like Mary Jo was saying. But they released a dev channel build. I think it was last Thursday. They try to do it on Wednesday now, but sometimes it slips. Sometimes they just skip. You know, it just doesn't work out that week. But the new dev channel build added, among other things, a couple small things, but an ARM native version of the Microsoft Store, which means that to date, the Microsoft Store that's available in the Windows and ARM builds for Windows 10 or 11 is an x86 app that's running an emulation, which is kind of crazy. Hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things like you hear that and you're like, wait, what? Like this wasn't native the whole time? Okay. So I guess they're moving it native. So it's, again, a little small step for ARM, big step for mankind. I don't know. kind of moment, I guess. So anyways, in some future version of Windows 11, the ARM store will be, I'm sorry, the Microsoft store will be native on ARM versions of Windows 11.
Hmm.
Exciting.
And Windows on ARM is still beta. It's not.
No, it's out. It's out? Generally available.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's just terrible. It's I just brought up. You can't see it actually, but I brought up a. It's an HP Elite Folio, which is a gorgeous computer, like a black faux leather cover, convertible form factor, perfect keyboard, really elegant looking, modern, and it runs Windows. You know, it's probably an 8CX chipset or whatever. It's garbage. It's
garbage. I was disappointed because that was the laptop I wanted. I wanted a leather
beautiful
laptop.
Looking. It's gorgeous. Yeah. Every time I bring it out, I'm like, oh my God, I love this thing.
I know.
And then you actually turn it on and wait for it to come up and
put
like,
Linux
oh,
on
right.
it. Paul. Actually, you may not be able to. HP's hard to get Linux on.
Well, plus it's ARM. I mean,
well, Linux has ARM. I don't know. ARM and Linux are like this.
ARM and Linux, you're crazy.
That's not a problem. Somebody in the chat room, I don't remember his name, was saying that even though he can't get Windows 11, he's not eligible. He keeps getting pushed Windows 11. I think he's even getting pushed 22H2, which is hysterical.
Yeah, so this is a story that just came out. It's not clear exactly what's happening here. I think it might be insider builds only. Oh, good. Okay, please.
So, this came from Reddit, right? Like, people were out complaining on Reddit. Like, I'm getting pushed 22H2, but my PC doesn't comply.
I've got an email from people
who
got it.
Yeah. Right. Yep. So Brandon LeBlanc, who is program manager on Insider Program, just said, we're investigating an issue where banner for Windows 11 22H2 is showing for PCs that are not eligible, and we are working to fix it.
Okay, so it is exactly what I suspected and what I wrote back to the two people emailed me, which is this feels like a mistake on Microsoft's part.
Yep.
There you go. Oh, because
and if you,
you mean
try
it
to
actually
install
run just
it.
Fine on those computers?
No. If you try to install it, you get an error.
Okay. Yep. Interesting. Okay,
so,
that's
mistake.
I didn't mean to say that it's good, but all right, that makes sense.
Yeah. No, but at least it makes sense because if it wasn't a mistake, then you have to wonder like what are they going to relax the requirements when 22H2 comes out or like what's going on?
Well, yeah, especially
right?
if it's an insider build, you know, you're thinking, well, maybe for 23H2 or something, they'll let in some more computers or some more generations or whatever, but
No, so far they're saying it's an error. It is in error. Sorry.
An unearned error, as we call it.
An unearned error, yes.
Okay. I think Leo's gone, so let's press on.
Okay. All right. Well, good, because this story is very important, guys. Exchange Server.
Is it?
Yes. Because 2 years ago, Microsoft said the next version of Exchange Server that people could run on premises would be out in 2021. They said there'd be a new version of Exchange Server, a new version of SharePoint Server, a new version of Skype for Business Server, and a new version of Project Server. Okay, so 2021 comes along, and you get the new version of SharePoint Server, which is called SharePoint Server, also the Project Server, subscription editions. So what these are is they're on-premises versions of the products. They have a lot of new features that already have been in the online versions being added to on-premises. And to use them, you have to buy a subscription to get security updates and feature updates. So it's kind of like a hybrid. It is on premises completely, but you have to have a subscription to get the updates. They say nothing about Exchange. Okay. They say nothing about Skype for Business. Time goes by. I keep getting emails from readers like, where is the next version of Exchange Server? I keep emailing Microsoft. They said we have nothing to share. I'm like, okay, so what is happening, right? Like, are they going to stop building Exchange Server for on-prem? I know a lot of customers want this, right? So then they come out with an update and said, you know what? We've been thinking a lot about this, and because of all the security issues that have happened involving Exchange over the past several years, we're going to really revamp what we're doing with the next version of Exchange Server. And in the interim, we're going to keep supporting Exchange Server 2019, and we're going to add more features and functionality to that. So if you're somebody who's been sitting around waiting for the next Exchange, you should just upgrade to Exchange Server 2019 because they're going to support that until 2025 in October now. And that's when the next version of Exchange will come out. On premises is 2025. So some people are very alarmed about this. They're like, wait, so they're going to support Exchange Server till 2025, but at the same time, they're going to roll out the new Exchange in 2025, right? So that's a little concerning because that's not a big window of opportunity, right? Like say you're on 2019 and suddenly here's the new version, but you've got like a month before support ends, right? So They're
Maybe
saying
they're
we're going to make it as...
everyone will just move to the cloud in the interim.
I know. That's what some people said. This is a way to push people to the cloud. But the people on the Exchange Server team are saying, no, that's not what we're trying to do. We're going to make it so easy to upgrade from 2019 to whatever the next version is called, if it's called 2025 or whatever. We're building all these kinds of things in, so you're not going to have to change your hardware. You're not going to have to redo your mailboxes, all these things. So it's going to be a super easy and fast upgrade. So they're acting like, don't worry, we got this. Even if we give you a month to upgrade, you're going to be okay.
Anybody who's running Exchange Server on-prem is used to constant, continuous pain.
Yes, they are.
Used to abuse.
But there's so many people. So many people still do it.
Are still really a lot of people running on-prem?
Yes. Yes.
For security reasons or privacy?
Compliance.
Yeah,
compliance. Privacy, right? That's primarily who I hear from.
Probably This is probably not related, but there's another Microsoft post today on Devblogs about Exchange Online and how they're moving that product to .NET. They call it .NET Core, which is goofy. They're moving it to .NET 6 is what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
So what used to call .NET Core. So I guess the current version is largely written in C#, which I would imagine on-prem Exchange is not. And it must be on the .NET framework, you know, 4.7 or 4.8 or whatever, you know, the legacy .NET, right? But I wonder, you know, this seems like a big engineering effort, right? It's not as simple as going to Visual Studio, checking the .NET, you know, 6 box and recompiling. Yeah. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of work to do here.
But I wonder if this
is in any way impacting.
It could be, like, security related somehow, right? Because there's so many security issues that have affected Exchange over the past several years.
Right. It's been awful.
Right?
Oh, my God. It's just nonstop.
Yeah. And if you're wondering that's the update on Exchange Server on-prem. But if you're somebody who's also waiting for Skype for Business, the next version on-prem, and I have a lot of people also waiting for that, we have no info. None. No info. Yeah, they aren't saying anything.
I would be shocked if there was a new version of that product.
There is supposed to be.
There's supposed to be a lot of things. We're supposed to have flying cars by now, too. But
no, you know what? You know why they do this? Because they have big customers who demand it, basically. And they're like, I'm not buying this unless you can promise me. And they even said in the Exchange blog, this is not necessarily our last version of Exchange Server on-prem. Like, there could be more and likely will be more in the future because there are customers who are like, I can't see an end date for when I'm going to get off Exchange on-prem.
Yeah. This is the part of Microsoft that's like Oracle. It's just like or SAP.
Keep going
or
with
something.
The,
just
yes,
big
yep.
monster enterprise,
right? And they got to do what the customers want because they're the big big customers, like the Fortune 50.
Exchange Online thing is this is a different part of Microsoft because if you think about like why would you move a code base to .NET 6 today, right?
Yeah,
well, that's
the
a
number
good question.
One, why?
The number one answer that any developer would tell you, and it's true based on what I've read, is performance improvements, right? It's .NET 6 is significantly better performance than .NET 5 and 3.x and whatever we go back to the client.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they also, so they say that. They're like, yep, we're doing it that. And then, but then it starts to fall off the side of a cliff. It's like, there's three reasons, right? So the second reason is .NET framework is no longer being actively developed, is actively being supported and will be supported for probably another decade, frankly. But and so we wanted to move to a modern framework that was blazing a trail to the future. Okay. And then the third, and this is the ridiculous answer, is it's cool and shiny and new. No, that is
wrong
not a reason.
Answer.
Not a reason. And that makes me doubt everything you're doing. But anyway, it's good that they're doing that work, I'm sure. Anyway, I'm going to look at that more closely a little later, but that's, you know, maybe it's unrelated.
All right, little.
I don't know.
So you watched Mary Jo probably had her head under her covers Monday, but you watched the Apple event, Paul.
I didn't even know there was an Apple event.
I love it. But Paul, I could see your snark on Twitter, so I knew that you were paying attention.
I was on fire.
You were. You were. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to get your reaction to, because one of the things I thought about, and it was weird, but Apple announced a new app that looked like a shared whiteboard. Didn't look like a big deal, but I thought Freeform looked maybe a little bit like
everyone's
Loop or
doing
Notion.
One of those.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll talk about
that. Or like the Google has one for, I think it's called
Google had
Canvas,
Wave way back in the day, but yeah, they're doing Canvas.
I know, but now they have something called, I think it's called Canvas, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Loop.
And you said, I loved it. And Loop, that's right. And you said, and I'm reading this as we're doing it. Nobody wants to collaborate. Okay. But okay, we'll talk about that. of all the people, because you...
Apple, let's go do that thing.
Yeah, let's go do the thing no one wants. But you and Mary Jo do. That's why we use Notion. Yep. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a sec.
Oh, today, Leah, we have a story about just today.
Oh, good. All right. Our show today brought to you by Nuvei, Nuvei. Do you know them? They're tomorrow's payment platform designed to accelerate your business. A lot of people start, you know, payment platform. They don't pay much attention. They use somebody, and it maybe by now you're starting to realize it's holding you back. You need something a little more modern. You need Nuvei. You need Nuvei's next generation payment technology. It not only boosts conversions, which of course is a big part of your bottom line, it reduces fraud, yes, and increases approval rates. Plus, it's going to work seamlessly with your existing tech stack. So it's not a big rewrite. It's a simple thing to connect Nuvei's platform, a single API integration. It's an agile platform. Your business will be allowed to add new payment methods, enter more markets. Nuvei offers, get this, 550 alternative payment methods, including cryptocurrencies. Local payment solutions around the world in 150 currencies. They offer local acquiring in 46 countries, more than 200 global markets. Now you get some idea, right? This is truly global. Customers benefit from all payout options, card issuing, banking, and fraud management services. Nuvei is designed for load. It can handle any high-demand peak event. They're always on approach, assures 5-9s uptime. And they offer flexible a la carte solutions that are tailored to your needs. So you don't have to buy some big package you'll never use. You get just what you want. And I'll tell you, the best way to kind of assess all this is, who do they work with? Who uses Nuvei? Think about DraftKings and the kind of traffic they generate in these peak events. Nuvei, no problem. Wix uses Nuvei. Valve uses Nuvei. General Motors, Valentino, Crypto.com, and many, many more. That's a testament to how well Nuvei works in challenging environments globally. With future-proof technology, a dedicated team of 24/7/365 human support professionals. Somebody will answer your call. Nuvei prepares your business for whatever comes next. Say goodbye to abandoned carts, poor approval rates, high chargebacks with Nuvei. N-U-V-E-I, the platform, fast-forwarding to the next generation of payments. Turn payments into powerful accelerators for your business. Nuvei.com, N-U-V-E-I.com. Nuvei, tomorrow's payment platform. We thank him so much for supporting Windows Weekly. So, it's funny because, Paul, now when I watch an Apple event, I always think about what Paul's thinking as he's watching this. You're the loyal opposition, or maybe disloyal. I don't know. But, you know, your point of view is important. You're muted right now, by the way.
No, I feel like I'm just clear-eyed about it. You know, I think...
That's another way to put it. Yeah.
It's the Paul positive way to put it. I mean, it's like the,
No, I always want your take. I agree.
Yeah. By the way, for whatever it's worth, we were talking earlier, Mary Jo and I, about the Apple thing, and she said exactly the right thing, which is, she said, I feel like what they do is always incremental. And I'm like, yeah, that's almost always true. And, iPad multitasking specifically, most years there'll be like a little advance. You know, one year they skipped it entirely. One year they added like mouse and trackpad, that was huge. And then this year they're doing yet another step. And yeah, it's incremental. They never will just take like just make it like a Mac. No, we'll probably get there eventually, but it might take like 10 years. You know, the iPad is 12 years old. They've really baby stepped into this stuff, and that's what Apple is. But you know, you do something that people have wanted for a million years, like actually look at the lock screen and be able to do something with it, which is useless today on an iPhone. You get like a standing ovation for this. It's like, why didn't you do this 10 years ago? You know, because they're Apple. Like they move really ploddingly. I mean, it's just the way they are. But they present everything like it's the, you know, greatest innovation that's ever happened. And these days, because they're doing these virtual events, it's like the same budget as a Star Wars movie, so special effects, they're zooming around like it's Mission Impossible or something, and it's like, yeah, okay, but I don't feel like those things are going to age very well, personally. But
yeah, the initial reaction for people who installed the developer beta since the event on Monday was, it's kind of a mess, but it is very early. Public beta is next month. I think it's more important than that, because I think what Apple's saying is, we are going to make these very powerful. By the way, it doesn't apply to most iPads, just the most powerful.
No, they never said that, and that's true. You need an M1 based iPad. There's
for
only
a lot of
two.
It. Some Airs will do it as well.
Okay. No, I'm talking for that specific
multitask. Stage manager.
Yeah.
Well, but you want something powerful. It really, what I think they're saying is we're going to have two different computing systems.
Right.
The M1 iPads, which are as powerful as the desktops, but are touch. And so they're not going to do what Microsoft did, which tried to shoehorn touch into a desktop operating system. They're bifurcating. They're not going to make macOS more like iPad. They're not going to make iPad more like macOS.
Yeah.
They're going to be...
They're actually... You're right. But I would say they're trifurcating because they've created a world in which
iOS
there are now two different kinds of... on iPad.
Yeah.
I mean, like there are two different kinds of iPads now. There are iPads that can do this stuff and iPads that can't. And some of them are the same size. You know, some of them are smaller. That's cute. Whatever. But the Apple approach is quirky. I will say some of the stuff they do... grows on me, even though I'm initially opposed to it. Like that app library, the thing they added to iOS a few versions back. I was like, "What? Just add an all apps screen for crying out loud!" And there's a weird series of swipes you have to do just to get to that all apps list. But the thing is, as goofy as it is, I actually kind of like app library. Like I often find what I need in those thumbnails and don't have to go any further. And it actually kind of works, and I think their goofy way of thinking differently, for lack of a better term.
They're not giving you an explorer, a file explorer.
No.
They're not giving you a finder, but they are giving you more capable files. Right. I think that this is just going to be – this is desktop computing for people who grew up with iOS, with iPhones. For
and that's everybody.
30. Yeah, it's everybody now.
Unfortunately, so
young
it's
people.
Everybody.
Yeah. This solves a problem they had, which is you have, they even do ads for iPads saying, what's a computer, right?
Sure.
But it is a computer. In fact, it's very, the pros are very, very capable, and nothing's ever lived up, the software's never lived up to the power of the hardware.
It's goofy that Apple's the thing holding the iPad back, right?
Yeah.
You know, when the iPad first arrived, there was this kind of debate, and that we would have had in the Windows 8 timeframe as well. Like, do you take this really complex thing, Windows, and bring it down and add touch, which didn't work so well? Or do you take this really simple thing, iOS, put it on a larger device and kind of bring it up and add functionality to it? And so Apple has gone that route. I would say it's worked out pretty well. It would have worked out even better if they had just moved a little more quickly. Like, they're plotting refusal to like make this thing full featured for the people that want that is so goofy.
Well, they still
Apple, you know,
they still have a Mac. I mean, they still have the Air and the MacBook Air and stuff. And so,
yeah,
the MacBook Air functionally isn't so very different than an iPad. It's about the same size. It has a keyboard. That's the big difference. And it's running Mac OS.
Well, it doesn't have touch. There's no touch.
Yeah. Well, I think they're saying there's going to be, you know,
yeah.
I think they're kind of on an interesting path. I also think that this collaboration thing is very interesting. The other thing somebody said about this new whiteboard app that they just hinted at, it looked like a shared whiteboard, is this could also be for them a step towards AR. That this may end up being an AR productivity app.
Okay.
Take away the white, and you've got floating widgets.
Yep.
You could put videos in there, documents, web pages, text, notes, drawings.
Yeah. Look, I for people who are in that ecosystem, I'll just say you're all going to hell, and I don't know what
Well, that's the other thing. They made a massive ecosystem play because all of this stuff is, you know, only works best. I mean, if you got all Apple, even try to use an Android phone with this. You know, you'd be nuts.
That's right.
Right.
Advantages are real. I mean, there's some incredible stuff there.
Yeah.
I'm using an iPhone right now with this Windows computer with a cable and the software called
Camo. Yeah.
And
well, they
Apple
Camo.
Is building that into Mac OS, whatever.
Yeah, they Sherlocked
And
them.
They're going to let you mount your iPhone on top of your laptop like it's a giant webcam and use it that way. And okay. I mean, that's great. I mean, you already have it. The best camera in the world is in your pocket, and you're not using it for web calls, you know.
Right.
So here's a way to do that.
Right.
I mean,
Camo,
to
its credit, works with Android, which, of course, this Apple technology will not.
Well, and it also works with an iPhone with a Windows computer, which the iPhone will, you know, Apple will not support.
The other thing that they announced, which I think is really important, is passkeys. They're going to now, they're joining with Google and Microsoft. They're going to add passkeys. I think finally we are seeing the beginning of the end of passwords.
Yeah, thank God Apple had to step in to make that happen, because God knows we haven't been doing it in the Windows world for 2 years or whatever.
Well, but you know, but, now everybody's doing it, I guess is the point,
it's,
right?
It's good. Yeah, it's good.
And there, Steve Gibson raised an interesting question yesterday. He said, but is it interoperable? In other words, if I start with an iPhone,
right,
can I move to an Android phone? Can if I start with a Mac?
Only someone who's never used an iPhone would ever ask that question. That's hilarious. I love Steve Gibson, but
it's a great question. Apple apparently says it is. They had a track yesterday at WWDC, and they said there is an export.
I enjoy that they introduced that feature without mentioning any industry support whatsoever. It was just like an Apple thing. Although they did talk about Matter, which I thought was kind of interesting. Yeah. This doesn't impact us too much, but this smart home standard is humongous, and Google is going all out supporting it as well.
Yeah.
So matters or whatever, but that was good.
I'm less excited about home automation. I kind of feel like that ship has sailed, but passkeys is going to change everybody's life, I think.
Because Matter is like the is to smart home what QuickPair is to Bluetooth. It's just making it a little bit simpler. And, and also, I think the cross-ecosystem thing is huge. Most smart home devices will work with HomeKit and work with Google Assistant or whatever it's called. But I think just having you need a standard. I think it's fine. It's not going to change my life, but I think it's a good thing.
Well, anyway, there you go. That's our quick and dirty Paul take on WWDC.
Yeah.
Anything else?
That's enough.
Yeah, that's enough. Yeah. That's more than enough.
More than they deserve.
Way more.
Poor Mary Jo. She's got this and still Xbox to come.
I know.
Let's talk about the Windows app SDK, though, before we move on.
Yeah, so this is that thing that used to be called Project Reunion. It was the attempt by Microsoft to decouple what used to be UWP capabilities from specific versions of Windows 10 and now Windows 11. And make them available to all versions of Windows that are currently supported, right? So that alone is kind of a big deal. It doesn't erase the central problem with UWP, which is that it's a WinRT-based set of APIs that is really designed for mobile apps. I've been working with this a lot lately, and I'm having trouble understanding what the point of this is, but I believe that when you create a Windows app SDK app, it's actually technically a desktop app, but it's really a non-coupled UWP. I don't know what it is. It's very strange. But you get the newer capabilities like WinUI 3. So if you look at something like the version of Notepad that's in Windows 11, I don't actually know for a fact that was created with WinUI 3, other than the fact that I'm trying to recreate it in the Windows app SDK, and it looks identical. So to me, you get access to all those, you know, the new materials, that new WinUI stuff, the new text rendering, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, app SDK 1.0 came out, I think, in November, and app SDK 1.1 was supposed to come out during build, and it just came out this past week. So it was delayed by about a week and a half or whatever. You know, what's new? I mean, push notifications, support for multiple windows. You know, the original version supported like windowed applications, obviously, and a few other things. There's really not a lot going on there, but it's just the latest version. It supports Mica, that opaque background material that Mary Jo probably notices in all the new apps, because it's super different from acrylic.
Oh, I thought you meant Mica Sargent, which is, you know,
it doesn't support Mica Sargent. You know, there's no Mac support. Anyway, it's out now. So nice. I'm probably going to write something about the Windows app SDK. I'm not sure I'm going to do the full app thing. I might just explain how you would bring it up, because the UWP project I made, you could basically just copy and paste. It would work in Windows app SDK. I don't know. I'm looking into that. But there's some neat stuff you can do. They actually have some good starter projects you can get where you automatically get things like that slide out settings pane and the ability to go between dark and light themes and stuff like that. Like, they actually build templates for you now that you can get all that stuff for free. So there's some niceties to it. But not a major release by any stretch of the imagination. but a release, as we call it.
A release.
A release. It is a release. It's like Windows 11. It's not a major release, but it is a release.
Yeah.
All right. There's no way around it, Mary Jo. We've got to do it. It's Xbox time.
It looks short, at least.
Thank God.
It is short.
Thank
God. It is very short. Because what used to be called E3 and will next year be called E3 again is not happening this coming week, but it normally would be. And Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo, I'm sure, all the big game companies are going to start, you know, making announcements. In fact, I'll just do this a little bit out of order. Activision today announced Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, or as I call it, the thing I will be spending my next year and a half playing. So I haven't, because this happened just as we were starting the show, I haven't really been able to watch this, but there's some single-player stuff happening, multiplayer. They're talking about all the content they're going to release in the wake of this. They really want to make up for the disaster that was the last World War II game. So this is probably going to be a really big release. The remake, or whatever you want to call it, the redo of the Modern Warfare title that came out, I guess, 3 years ago now, was probably the biggest game they ever released. And this is this, you know, obviously the sequel. So they're doing the trilogy again. This is coming out on October 28th, which I think is Bill Gates' birthday.
Oh.
I don't know why I know that.
How nice to celebrate. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So that's happening. E3, like I said, not happening this year. Is happening next year. They're going to do a hybrid event next year. So they
really?
Announced that.
Are they? Really?
Yeah. They're right. Well, that's what they said. Really? You know, we don't want to see it. We know with E3 things change.
Yeah.
And then
that sounds
Microsoft.
More like aspirational. Like if we could get Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, Activision, EA to show up, hey, we could have a show. They won't.
Right. I mean, even when E3 was an ongoing thing, the big players were having side events outside of E3.
That was the beginning of the erosion of E3.
So I don't. Can they get back Sony and Microsoft?
No, probably not.
But I bet we have a lot of game news next week, so you can stay tuned for that. The developer of Minecraft, Mojang Studios, or as we would call it in Mexico, Mojang Studios.
Mojang Studios.
I tell you, we know a guy then whose name is Joel, or as they call him in Mexico, Joel.
Joel.
which is a really hard thing to say. I know.
Joel.
You just don't see that word when you look at his name. No. You may know this if you're familiar with Minecraft. Minecraft started as a Java game, and it was extensible, all these add-ons and things happened for it. And then they made a new version of it that was not based on Java. And those two things are completely... Bedrock Edition, exactly.
Yeah.
So those two things are completely incompatible. Today, they have released the Minecraft Java and Bedrock Edition on PC.
I have to figure out what this means, because I run a Java server. So what does that mean?
So I don't think they've actually combined them. There's a single launcher where you can get into either. Minecraft Java Edition is still like the legacy version.
So it's a unified launcher. Okay.
It's a unified. I believe that's... Yes, it is. Java and Bedrock will remain separate games with distinctive features.
Yeah. See, I wanted to be able to let Bedrock... I want to play, for instance, on my server on the iPad with Bedrock, but I can't. Right. That's a Java server. So,
what you want is ray tracing and all those, you know, those awesome features they're starting to build.
Ray traced Minecraft is wild.
Yeah. No, they're going to remain separate. But what they're doing now is instead of having them as two separate things, you buy kind of separately. Like you just get them both together. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think I ever played the Java version. I don't think so.
Man, I played it nonstop. I still play it once in a while. Yeah. Kids do. We have a Club Twit. Two Minecraft servers for Club Twit. We have a hard survival game that's really hard, and we have the old Twit build that Chad did. That's the whole, you know, the studio and everything. This whole is huge. It's a beautiful build. So those I run both of those, and Club Twit members can get in those.
Given that this would have been E3, and that there will almost certainly be a ton of announcements between now and next week, I'm suggesting that maybe Mary Jo comes up with some kind of a jury duty excuse or something for next week.
Feed my cat.
Guys, call the next big game, Call of Jury Duty. You heard it here.
Call of Jury Duty. That's awesome.
That could be a real zombie game. That'd be fun. Call of Jury Duty. All right. Yeah. Michael still plays COD. He likes the zombie level.
Zombies, yeah.
Plays it all the time. Still plays it. With all the games he has, he still plays it.
I never got into Zombie. I tried it, you know, each time.
You have to be, you have to like that kind of game, which is a little weird.
I don't, it's the type of game. I like the graphical style of it. I've often said that there's no better thing to shoot than a Nazi zombie. I mean, my God, it's the most guilt-free crime imaginable.
Yeah, they deserved it.
You know.
When we set up the Minecraft server, I wanted to make it easy to remember, you know, just not just enter in an IP address. So what did I do? I went to our sponsor, hover.com, and I got a domain just for the Minecraft server. It was kind of fun because I said to Michael, who was at the time maybe 14, 15, I said, what do you want to name it? I'm not going to say what it is, but I mean, you still couldn't get in, but I don't want to give out the name. But it's hysterical. And I said, okay, went to hover.com, registered it. And now it's easy for him and anybody else, and actually, you know who knows it? The people in Club Twit who go to that server, because that's the name. It's pretty funny. Hover is a great way to get domain names. Something silly like your Minecraft server, something serious like your business, your portfolio if you're a photographer, an artist, an online store, your blog. I could never get Leo.com because, you know, various people own it. So I went to Hover, I typed in Leo and got a whole bunch of choices. Finally ended up doing Leo.fm. That's actually shorter than Leo.com. I love it. If you want to make just as something as simple as a more memorable redirect to your LinkedIn page, Hover has the best domain names for you and email too. In fact, I really want to put in a plug for this. On the radio show, we get people all the time saying, my AOL email is broken. I can't get into my Yahoo mail. And I want to make a plug for if you use email, it's important to you. Don't use a free service. Pay a little bit. Not a lot. It's a few bucks a year. But pay a little bit so that you've got a better email. And Hover's got that. Not just, you know, Leo at Yahoo.com. It's your custom domain name. So if you're a business, so much better. If you're a plumber, a carpenter, a hamburger joint, a dry cleaner, to have your business name.com. Hover has it for you. Or, you know, they have some fun ones, too. If you're a pizza joint, you can get .pizza. Leo.pizza, man, that would be a good name for a pizza parlor, right? Easy to set up. And if you get Hover Mail, it's domain-based. You can add as many mailboxes to your domain as you need. And you don't have to think about it because when your domain renews, your mailboxes renew too. It's a very affordable choice. If email's important to you, stop using Gmail. Stop using free solutions. Get your own domain name. Get email Hover. You're going to get better support, much better real support, actual support. You're going to get a great service. They have webmail, so you can use your browser to check your email, but you can also use any mail client. It's standard IMAP mail. I love it. And Hover, the other thing I love about Hover, they're Canadian. They're nice. They don't upsell you. They're not there just to get you to sign up for a bunch of stuff. Some of those other registrars, you sign up for a domain name, there's 20 pages of other things that you have to say, no, I don't want that. No, I don't want that. No, I don't want that. Hover's not pushy. No, they know you're going to want, for instance, Whois privacy. They don't upsell you on that. They give it to you. It's included with your domain purchase. That's important. In fact, anytime you register a domain name, because as part of the registration process, your email, your address, your name become phone number become public. So you want Whois privacy to hide that so that you don't get spam and get weird people calling you, stuff like that. That's something everybody wants. Hover knows that. They don't upsell it. They just build it in. You also get the best pro-level tools. Whether you're a web pro and you know all there is to know about DNS, that you'll like the DNS management console. If not, they have simple one-button connects to almost all the main websites. Hover Connect, they call it. It lets you start using your domain name with a couple of clicks. The point at Hover is you're a customer, not a source of data. So take back control of your data with reliable email, tracker-free. Hover's trusted by hundreds of thousands of customers. All my domains are registered at Hover. I literally have dozens. Turn your ideas into a reality or your Minecraft server into a clever name. Whether you're a developer, photographer, small business, Hover has something for you to expand your projects and get the visibility you want. And if you're doing email and your company name is not in the email Go to hover.com/twit right now. You'll get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension, and they've got dozens for the first year. Hover.com/twit, 10% off your domain extension for a full year. We love Hover. Thank you, Hover, for supporting Windows Weekly and Paul and Mary Jo. And you support them, too, when you go to hover.com/twit, hover.com/twit. Okay, Paul, time for the back of the book. Yes?
When on earth did you have time to put a sticker on that laptop?
Well, Jim Latterback, bless his heart, when we were at Tech TV, he was the guy who wrote the ethics policy. And one thing he did is he went around the whole studio and he taped over all the brand names and all the monitors and all the computers because he said, no, we're not, this is something we're using, we're not plugging. So I make it a habit of doing that. And I happen to have a nice little Twit sticker. Now, the way it's angled, you can't really tell, but if I tilt it, you might see that Dell sticker, the Dell silvery Dell beneath it. But if it's tilted like that, you can't tell. Clever, eh? Now, that's my tip of the week. What's yours?
I have three.
Three.
It's a big week for tips.
Woohoo!
For some reason. So this one's just basic. So contrary to Mary Jo's assertion that there's nothing new in Windows 11 22H2, I've started a series describing those new features.
Oh, good. I have to read that now. That yeah.
So I've only written two so far about the start. It'll be quick. Yeah, sure. They're brief. They're like pamphlets. The start menu and the taskbar. And let me see. I have a list of... Probably should have had this ready. It's in here somewhere. But I'll be... If this ever comes up. Yeah, so Snap, File Explorer in OneDrive, Search, Quick Settings, Desktop and Lock Screen, Task Manager, Settings, and Accessibility are all coming. So there'll be more. And let's see. That was quick, like the update itself. And then I mentioned this adding the Windows 11 visual style to Microsoft Edge. So last week, Microsoft released Edge version 102, which didn't seem to have much in the way of new features. But actually, you can set a flag and enable, and it will basically display an option in settings that will enable the Windows 11 visual style. And then there's a second option, and this is that tab thing we were talking about earlier, where you can also use rounded corners for browser tabs. And what that does is it makes the browser tabs kind of separate and float as little rounded rectangles. Some people don't like that, obviously, so you don't have to do that. That's optional. You don't have to do any of this, actually, but it's a separate option, so you can do that as well if you would like to get the full experience. I think it looks nice, personally. And then the third one, and this is weird because it actually comes from my wife. My wife spends, I bet she interviews at least one person almost every single day. This is how she spends her life. When she writes, a lot of it is based on interviews with doctors and so forth. And she records these calls using Zoom. And then she uses a feature that's only in Word for Web. It's not in Word for Windows that will transcribe any audio or video file for you. You need a Microsoft 365 account to do this. There's actually a limit on how much you can do per month, which I don't believe Microsoft documents, but she has run into this limit because she transcribes so much. And so let me see if I can find the limit. The limit is 300 minutes of transcription per month. If you're on 298 minutes and you have to transcribe a 60-minute call, it will actually do that for you. So it's, you know, the last transcription, once it crosses over 300, you're done for the month. So the reason I know this feature exists is because she, almost every month, she hits this limit. And at the end of the month, she still says, start sending me files and say, hey, do you mind transcribing this?
That's funny.
This has happened enough. So this is how this has benefited me, right? So I go back and I watch all these old Microsoft events on YouTube. And a lot of them are not on official channels. They don't have transcriptions. I don't know if you know this, but a lot of YouTube videos actually have automatic transcriptions. That's something you can do with most YouTube videos. But a lot of the ones I've been watching for this series I've been writing do not. So I can download the file, the video, put it up into Word for Web, transcribe it, pop it down, and then I can use it. Instead of having to sit there and try to type everything exactly like they say it, I can get a transcription that way. So kind of a fun little thing to know about. I don't think most people do know about that. You do need a Microsoft 365 account.
So walk
Which ones accounts? Can it be personal, consumer?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Yeah, I didn't know about it. Yeah. It's pretty good transcription.
No, I don't think anyone knows about it. Yeah. It's a great feature.
Because I use commercial services like otter.ai, but they're not free. Yeah. Yep. I mean, they're free, but they're
That's
not
right.
free forever. All right, walk me through this edge thing.
Yes.
To make it look pretty.
Yeah, actually, the easiest thing for you to do would be to click on the link in the...
the tab?
In the notes.
Click on your link. Okay. Yeah.
Tip of the week number two, right?
Yeah.
Because what it has is the exact link to go... Like, instead of going to flags and searching, it has the exact link to go to it. So it's like Edge Flags.
Oh, but I should do that in... okay, so I need Edge. Need to do that in Edge. So
what you do that, and then you restart.
There it is. Edge.
Then when you go into Edge Settings and go to Appearance, there's going to be a new option there called Show Windows 11 Visual Effects in the Title Bar and Toolbar.
Got it.
Preview.
All right,
enable that option, restart the browser again, and then you get the Windows 11 look and feel.
Here we go. Here's Edge Settings. It's Show Experimental Experience Settings. Should I change that?
Yep. To Enabled.
Enabled. All right.
Right.
And then
restart at the lower
That's
right.
all? Just to restart, and that's it? Yeah. Oh, there's still more? Okay.
Oh, no, there's more. So then now go to Settings. So the little ... menu in the upper
right. You do that before because you have to turn that experiment on. And now I go to Settings.
Now it's in the UI. That's what put it in the UI. So you go to Settings.
Yep.
Go to Appearance on the left.
Okay.
Now, you'll see an option. It says Show Windows 11 Visual Effects.
There it is. Turn that on.
Now you have to restart
Let's restart
again.
And see. Oh, it's so much better.
But if you turn on the rounded corners.
Oh.
That will be.
Even better.
The full meal deal.
Oh yeah! Now it's just like Firefox.
Right. That's why when you had Firefox, I was like, "Hey, what are you running? Because that looks exactly like Edge."
That's hysterical. Okay, cool.
Yep. That thus my confusion.
That's fascinating. All right. So this is good. This is the set portion
of
the show.
You thought there was nothing new in Windows 11.
Paul helps me, and I'm waiting. I was going to wait till after the show to reboot into. H2, 22H2, but I think it's ready. Yeah, it says restart.
Oh, it's ready.
Oh, it's all ready, baby. Restart required. Ooh, as soon as we get the beer, I'm doing it.
Nice.
I'll have a beer and do it.
Sweet.
All right, let's start with the Mary Jo Foley Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Okay, I'm curious if Paul ever heard of this, because I never had. Program called the Windows Customer Connection Program. You ever hear of that?
Nope,
me neither. So it's a program via which Microsoft is trying to get, well, right now they're trying to get on board IT pros who want to find out about Microsoft products before they're announced. So they put you under NDA. You can talk directly to the engineering team. You can get previews of things that are upcoming that have to do with Windows and apps that run on Windows. And to qualify, you fill out a form. In the show notes, I link to an article on this. But if you go to the Insider blog, Windows Insider blog, they've got a whole article about this. And it's kind of like the technology adoption program, which is something that big companies use when they want to test Windows releases and other products early. But this is something for IT pros. So I think a lot of the people who listen to Windows Weekly could qualify for this if they wanted to. I would assume you could. It says it will give you access to exclusive virtual calls, focus groups, surveys, team discussions, and private previews, all about existing software, also yet to be released software. You can engage directly with Microsoft's Windows engineering teams that is building some of these products. So I'm like, I never even heard of this, but the news is they're expanding this to now include IT pros. So if you're somebody who doesn't mind signing a probably pretty broad NDA with the Windows team, and you are not necessarily an MVP, but you could be an MVP, and you want this kind of access directly to the team and these kinds of calls, you might want to see if you qualify and fill out the form and see if you get in.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. The customer connection
interesting
program.
I know we couldn't get in as journalists, right?
But and just everyday people off the street either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
You need to have a contact at Microsoft or something.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Enterprise pick number two.
Right. So it's finally the day next week, June 15th. We've heard about this day for so long. This is the day Microsoft ceases support for many versions of IE11 on the desktop.
No.
I know. It's been so long in coming, it feels like, oh, it's finally happening. Yep, June 15th, 2022. So you can't say this is the retirement of IE11. You can't just make that blanket statement because there are still some things connected with IE11 that will continue to be supported after that date. So it does not affect you if you're on Windows 10 long-term servicing channel, so you're not affected by it. If you are on Server, Internet Explorer 11, desktop apps, and if you use anything that's built using the Trident rendering engine, which is the heart of IE11, that also doesn't affect you. But it's basically IE11 on all the Windows 10 client SKUs, Windows 10 IoT. So yeah, this is finally happening, and they're moving away from IE officially next week.
Okie dokie.
It's a day to know, a day to remember.
A day that will live in infamy.
Infamy.
No, it won't.
Not really.
It'll live in joy and wonder. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
So much so that I feel like I should have a tiki-style sour DIPA.
Excellent.
Wouldn't that be good right about now?
It would. It would. So sometimes craft beers are made to taste like wines. Sometimes they're made to taste like cocktails.
Oh.
The pick of the week is a cocktail type beer. It's from Hudson Valley Brewing in the New York area, but there are a lot of people who do this style. So they made a sour IPA. Tastes mostly like a sour beer, not like an IPA. And they made it to emulate a tiki style cocktail. What do I mean? They made it with pineapple,
okay.
Lime puree.
That's the key. Okay.
Blackstrap molasses to give it that little sweetness.
Mm.
There's milk sugar, and there's also almonds, which is a very interesting and odd addition. When I saw the list of ingredients on this, I'm like, this is going to be either terrible or very interesting, and it actually is very interesting. It's good. If you just poured it into a glass and gave it to me and said, what do you think this is? I would have said a cocktail, not a beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they say tiki style, they're talking like a Mai Tai or
yeah, exactly.
Pina colada,
right.
Or a daiquiri.
Right. If you had a little piece of, a little wedge of pineapple sticking out of your glass, you would not be amiss.
Sounds good. I like it.
No. So this is from Hudson Valley, like I said, but a lot of other beer brewers are doing this kind of thing where they're making a sour beer, but it tastes more like a cocktail than a beer. So if you're somebody a little on the fence about the whole craft beer thing, give it a try.
Nice. Demiurge, Hudson Valley Brewery.
Demiurge. Yeah, I didn't say the name. Demiurge is their rendition.
Demi, like a partial, like a...
Demiurge means something. I'm trying to remember what it means. I have to look it up.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah, that's a word.
I invented the phrase demi-scosh.
It's a being responsible for the creation of the universe.
Oh, okay.
Platonic... Oh. Neo-Pythagorean, Middle Platonic, and Neo-Platonic schools of philosophy. The Demiurge is an artisan-like figure. That's what's on the can, by the way. That's the Demiurge.
Yes.
Responsible for fashioning and maintaining the physical universe. It's a term from the Gnostics.
Wow.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yes.
Demiurge. That's a serious beer.
I have a Demiurge to have a drink.
Yeah. The creator god of the Old Testament.
Wow.
Yeah.
I
have never heard that term.
Neither have I.
Yeah.
Except on the beer cam.
I think you made it up.
No. Did not.
Wow. There you go. How does it happen? Such a great show, and already it's over. Wow. Paul Thorotten. Scant 2.5 hours later. No, it was only less than a 2-hour show.
Oh, that's true.
It was a nice, short, brief taste of goodness. And we thank Paul and Mary Jo for that. A little skosh. A little demiurge of goodness. Paul Thorotten's books are at leanpub.com. When am I going to get the field guide for Windows 11?
This is happening soon, Leo. I think I figured out the format.
Soon, TM. Yeah.
It's going to be tied to the 22H2. I can say that.
Is it going to be called Windows 11 Forever?
No. It's very temporary.
Windows 11 Demiurge.
He is the Demiurge.
I have a Demiurge to upgrade to 2022.
I'll give you an urge. That is leanpub.com for the Windows 10 field guide and soon the Windows 11 field guide. Paul is also, of course, at therot.com. That's where you can go to find all the goodness he talks about, including that upgrade to the look and feel of Edge that he just mentioned. Mm-hmm. So do you think that's 22H2 required or no?
I think sometime in 103, 104 time frame, they're just going to make it the default. I think that's how it's going to go. Right. Yeah, so it's unstable now, but it's not enabled by default. Yeah. They'll probably enable it sometime soon.
Mary Jo Foley writes for ZDNet. Her blog is at allaboutmicrosoft.com. We bring them together every Wednesday around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC, to do this little thing we call Windows Weekly. Now, you can watch it in a couple of different ways. There's audio and video. Audio and video live streams are available at live.twit.tv. So if you're around at 11 a.m. Pacific on Wednesdays, you can just watch us happen as it happens. Get the freshest version of it. And people who are around live like to chat with us in the chat room. That's at irc.twit.tv. Of course, if you're a member of Club Twit, you can also go to the Discord server that we run for Club Twit. Club Twit's, I should mention that, it's $7 a month, but you get some real benefits, chiefly that there are ad-free versions of all the shows, and you get a custom URL just for you that is ad-free versions of all the shows. You don't even hear this, the plug for, obviously, you're already a member for Club Twit. You get access to the Discord, which is a great community. Lots of benefits. I mentioned we have our own Minecraft servers. We also have the Untitled Linux Show, Stacy's Book Club. That's coming up in about 8 days. We're going to be doing Neal Stephenson's Termination Shock. I'm going to host that one because I love this book. It's a great book. I'm a Neal Stephenson fanatic. We also have Ask Me Anything's coming up with Alex Lindsay. We have a fireside chat with all the members coming up. Ant Pruitt's our community manager there. Does a great job. And there's a Twit Plus feed where, for instance, since I forgot to press record when I was talking about my new Dell laptop before the show, that'll probably end up in the Twit Plus feed. That's all the stuff that didn't make it into podcasts. All of that, $7 a month, I think it's a great deal, and it sure helps us smooth out the bumps, if you will, in monetization. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. And there's more to come, by the way. Lots more to come in the club. We're really doing some interesting stuff. After the fact, of course, you can still get free versions of the show. It's a podcast at twit.tv/ww. There's a Windows Weekly YouTube channel with all the shows. You can watch the videos there. That's a good one for sharing highlights. You can just clip a highlight and send that out. But the easiest thing might be to get a podcast player and subscribe. And if you subscribe, you'll get it automatically every week when it's available. Incidentally, if you would leave us a 5-star review, I could make sure that Paul Theroux.
Are you trying to curry a favor?
He said, "I'll make sure Paul Theroux adds you to his evening prayers every night."
Nice.
And I'd like to thank Joe and Sally for the 5-star review. Paul, Mary Jo, wonderful to have you. Are you going to Mexico soon, Paul?
No, but my wife is with my daughter.
Really? Oh, see? Yeah. See the benefit of this? The whole family
can
enjoy.
Get to walk the dog and clean up the dog mess. Yeah, it's huge.
How long are they going to be gone?
Just a week.
Oh, well, it's not that bad, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm not going to go until we get back from the cruise.
Oh, that's exciting. I don't know if we still have berths available. But you might check cruise.twit.tv if you suddenly say, you know what, I want to go to Alaska with Paul and Stephanie and Leo and Lisa and Rich Campbell and all those other great people who are going. Brad, Sam's, who's going? Not Brad.
Raphael.
Raphael. I always confuse Raphael. And I will bring the Dell.
I'm so happy to hear you say that.
Yeah. It may be too late. It may not be too late, but we'd love to see you. That's July 16th to the 23rd. In beautiful Alaska. Should be a lot of fun. And if it goes well, which I think it is so far, disaster has yet to strike. We might do it again next year.
I mean, I don't know of a lot of disasters at sea, so what could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? Now, don't say that, Paul. You're going to scare people off. There is not. Oh. Paul's never never done this before. When you get off this boat, Paul, it could go one of two ways. And yep. I've seen it happen to both. Some people go, I will never. There is something I will never do again.
Yeah. Right. Right.
In fact, there's a whole book, a whole article about one supposedly fun thing I will never do again. Then there's the other camp, of which Lisa and I are members. Mm. And, you know, Mary Jo, you liked your riverboat, right? In Vietnam. That was cool.
Oh, yeah. That was amazing.
Yeah. There are those who get off and go, can I get back on again now? Like, I don't want this to end.
I hope. Definitely cruise. This is the one cruise I always said I wanted to do.
Good.
I'm not like a Caribbean cruise kind of person, but I can picture doing like a riverboat in Europe kind of thing.
Those are so great.
You know,
in fact, maybe we'll do that next time. Yeah. Lisa and I are going to do that for Christmas 2023. We're going to have New Year's Eve in Vienna.
The Danube.
The Danube. Oh, wow. The Blue Danube. Nice. So I think a lot of people do this and go, hey, that was really great. That was really fun. So I'm hoping that you two will be in the latter group. Anyway, thank you, Paul. So. Thank you. And Mary Jo, you know, next time, if we do it again, we got to take you, too. But we'll do something you want to do. I think, you know, I think a riverboat would be fun. I love riverboat cruises. They're European very relaxing.
River cruise thing would be
Wouldn't
awesome.
That be great? Yeah. We did this because it's less expensive. We want to make it available to as many people as possible. Yeah, you know, it's kind of a fancy thing to do.
Leo, we have fans in Europe. I'm just saying, you know.
Good point. Good point. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android on twit.tv.